Welcome to Single Malt History with Gareth Russell, pouring out your serving of pure, distilled, intoxicating, and occasionally delicious history. It is very rare to find something in Tudor history that is genuinely new. And so I am absolutely delighted today to be joined by the assistant curator of Hever Castle, Kate McCaffrey, who I have said before and will say again in the confidence of being able to say, I told you so, will be one of the next great Tudor historians. I've had the privilege of privately seeing Hever Castle's most celebrated treasures, prayer books known as the Books of Ours. I'm aware that this is one of the words in a Northern Irish accent that doesn't always transliterate in my diphthongless tone. So the Books of Ours are H-O-U-R-S, so the passage of time. The Books of Ours, which once belonged to the castle's most famous resident, Anne Boleyn. They even contain personal notes jotted in her own handwriting. While studying for her postgraduate degree, Kate picked these books for her thesis, and the secrets she then found hidden and embedded within them change forever our understanding of how Anne Boleyn was remembered in the years after her execution, how women in Kent kept her memory alive, and crucially and quite movingly, how that may have been passed along to Anne's daughter, Queen Elizabeth I. Well, Kate, we've been trying to make this happen for a while, and each time COVID and Storm Barra wreaked havoc with our schedule. So after a suitably medieval cocktail of plague and tempest, welcome to Single Malt History.
Thank you so much. It's a great thing to finally be here.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, the first thing I suppose is that we should get out of the way is establishing for our listeners what precisely a Book of Ours is.
Yeah, absolutely. Great place to start. I mean, I always go back to the words of Eamon Duffy when I answer this question, who described them most succinctly as scriptural prayer books. And I think that's essentially exactly what they were. They were traditionally Catholic texts, so they did fade out of production in England during Elizabeth's reign. Their contents were mainly written in Latin, with prayers drawn largely from the Psalter. And there were key contents that appeared in all versions of Books of Ours, but the real beauty of them is that they were highly customizable texts. And obviously this was easier when they were all manuscripts. So before the advent of print, they were obviously all handwritten and decorated and customized very easily with things like heraldic devices, personal mottos, portraits, specific prayers. But even when the printing press came to the West and popularized Books of Ours even more, personalizations still were very common and became important, particularly for my personal favorite, personalization of Books of Ours, which is through the form of written intervention. And that is what my thesis really focused on. It's where these people use these books, sort of like a modern day diary. So they wrote dates of birth and marriage and death and occasions of family importance, medical recipes, all sorts of things. And so these books to us today really are very important, intimate insights into the everyday lives of the people who read them and used them.
Well, let's start with the legend of this particular book. And we don't know where this legend began. I mean, it's quite difficult to pinpoint its origin. But the long-standing legend is that Anne Boleyn had it for years. As you say, it's a very personal text, that she carried it with her on her walk to her execution in May 1536. And she then passed it into the hands of a trusted female confidant who was one of the ladies in waiting who accompanied her to the scaffold. And romantic legend has traditionally identified that person as Lady Margaret Lee, member of another elite family based in the county of Kent, where of course Hever is. And the legend also runs that one of the phrases which is inscribed in Anne's handwriting in the book, "Remember me when you do pray, that hope doth lead from day to day," was written by her as a sort of poignant farewell to her friend Lady Lee. Was that something you found to be corroborated or disprovable by your research?
Well, like you say, this book has certainly been the subject of a lot of myth. And it is what I would say and would also say about a lot of speculation either way. It's unfortunately unprovable. And so I couldn't outrightly tell you with all certainty that this legend didn't happen and isn't attached to Heber's book. But personally, from my research, it does unfortunately seem as if it's not the case to be attached to our book. I think it's actually a situation where legends of books once owned by Anne have got confused and overlapped. And I think this particular legend that's now attached to our book actually was first attached to a girdle book of Anne's, which is actually currently held at the British Library. It's MS Stowe 956. It's said to have been Anne's. It has a miniature of Henry at the front, and it matches a description in George Wyatt's account of the extracts of the life of Queen Anne Boleyn. He notes in his account that this girdle book was traditionally said to have been given by Anne on the scaffold to one of her maids of honour, to a lady of the family of Wyatt or a family friend of the Wyatts, who obviously were based in Kent as well. And he states that at that point in the 1800s, that the book is in his possession, which is how he knows this. So I think that it's a case of a legend kind of being misattached and misplaced. But what's quite interesting, and where I think this connection has been confused, is that actually in April of 1946, there was a robbery at Hever, where several priceless items were stolen from the castle, including a small girdle book psalter of Anne Boleyn's, which sort of oddly matches the description of the book in the British Library. So I'm not saying they're the same book, because the British Library do state that they purchased theirs in 1883. But it is interesting that when Heber kind of very tragically had our small girdle book of Anne stolen, that the myth of the scaffold seems to have transferred over to Lord Astor's other book of Anne's, which was our 1527 book. So I think that's probably where it's got confused.
That's, I mean, anything like that with the, I mean, I suppose robberies like that, by the way, are back in our consciousness again because of Mary, Queen of Scots, yes, rosary beads being taken from the Duke of Norfolk recently.
It's just tragic.
It really, as a historian, really you just feel like a punch in the chest.
It is, honestly, it's so awful. Such an emotional, visceral reaction to it.
I think, you know, if someone robbed your house, I don't know how. I just have a very clear image of pretty much every historian I know,
yes,
what we would do to the robber to try, yeah,
and get. Oh, absolutely.
Sort of demented army going on the at Hever. Do you know, it's so interesting, Kate, about the legend that can be, that seems to be permeating or mutating, and it can't be disproved or proved. That it reminds me, just because I've been editing a chapter on it in my next book, but
yes,
and I've worked on it in Young and Damned and Fair as well, which is, it reminds me a little bit of the legend of Catherine Howard's ghost, the at Hampton Court, that dash.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones that you can't pinpoint and you don't know where it comes from, but it does seem to be several things weaving in together. And
absolutely.
Yeah, which is fascinating.
It's so interesting.
Isn't,
I think,
it?
That's how history kind of just evolves, isn't it? It's just people pick up on something, but it always roots back to somewhere that someone said something or someone wrote something. And
there's often a little kindling for the smoke. It's not always,
exactly,
a fire, but there,
exactly,
is some match.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, can you tell us about your research into the afterlife of this book historically then? Who had it? Who was passing this book around after Anne died? And what can that tell us?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, it's super exciting to me to be able to talk about my research this year, because I've been working on it for a few years and had to keep it very, very secret. So it's great to talk about it. And yeah, that my research focused around some inscriptions that I uncovered in our Heber's printed 1527 Book of Hours. And I found four further inscriptions within that book. So it's traditionally only been known to have Anne's signed inscription, which, as you said earlier, is that wonderful rhyming couplet, "Remember me when you do pray, that hope doth lead from day to day." But I managed to uncover four further inscriptions within that book. I used ultraviolet light and photo editing software and spent many hours trying to decipher what this early modern half erased handwriting said.
Kate, did you like lose your mind?
Oh, yeah.
Did you find it?
I absolutely did. And it's still like incredibly surreal to me that it happened. I think it was, I always remember my supervisor called it a moment of serendipity when I found it. And I think it's absolutely that. It was just complete happy luck that I came across them, that I was able to look at them in the first place, which is thanks to Kiva's curator, Alison Palmer. Thank you.
Who's brilliant.
She is. And yeah, it was just, we were all in shock, I think, when we realized that nobody had realized that these were here.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
It's happened to me once. It was my friend Catherine Hard's missing confession that hadn't been published in centuries.
Just wonderful.
And I remember kind of freezing.
Yeah.
Thinking like, this couldn't be real. Like I thought for...
It was
2 a.m. in the morning and you're like, no, and there's no one around you. And also no one in your life who would care.
Yes, that's the thing. You want to scream and shout, but no one's there to listen. Yeah, it's a crazy feeling. I think, again, so lucky to be able to be the person to uncover that, just like you uncovered that amazing confession. Because it's just, I think, well, I was lucky enough to be with Ali, our wonderful curator. I was at Hever, obviously looking at the books. I wasn't allowed to take them home with me. So I was at Hever working with them and I found them myself, and then I called Ali over and was like, are you aware of these? And she wasn't aware. And so then a kind of buzz picked up and more people came over to have a look. So we all kind of shared in that moment. And
oh, that's wonderful.
Guessing what they might say.
Well, from a moderately selfish perspective, I was fascinated to read that one of the names inscribed inside seems to be that of Sir John Gage, who was the last jailer of Anne Boleyn's cousin, Queen Catherine Howard. People are obviously different at different times in their lives. I can only fairly comment with confidence on Gage as he appeared through his behaviour in 1542 with Catherine. But he does seem to have been a sort of quite honourable person. Certainly he insisted on treating the ex-queen Catherine with great ceremony and respect during the last days of her life. But I was very surprised to hear this. You know, what can you tell us? What is his link to the Boleyn book or Hever?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, it's really interesting as well, your knowledge of the connection between Sir John Gage and Catherine Howard, obviously Anne's cousin. I think he was a man who lived through a lot of queens.
Yeah.
He saw a lot of change. But his role in the Book of Hours is fairly central, I think. He wrote and signed one inscription within the book. So there's that. He's actually the only male author of an inscription within Anne's Book of Hours. They're predominantly written by women. One of the other inscriptions, I believe, was written by his wife, Philippa Gage, and then another written by Philippa's sister, Elizabeth Shirley, and then a final one written by their niece, Mary West. And so they're the kind of connections, familial kinship connections between the people who obviously use this book and own this book after Anne, but it does kind of center around the Gage family. Which is really interesting because a lot of reports on John Gage in terms of his relationship with Anne Boleyn is that he was, you know, he's very traditional Catholic.
Yeah.
He was not best pleased when Anne was sort of rising to power and became queen. I think he actually retired from court in protest at one point before he came back later. And so you wouldn't necessarily think that he'd be sympathetic to Anne's cause or would be kind of harboring her book in secret or anything like that. So it raises a lot of questions of kind of motive of why these people kept Anne's book safe. And one thing that I like to think, and it's something I'm doing more work into as we speak, but is that it was a case of maybe personal connections kind of overriding religious or political affiliations at this point. And I think as well, it has a lot to do with the female side of things and the kind of network of Kentish women who mainly wrote in this book, because obviously we can't tell exactly when John Gage wrote in this book. He may have written in it during Anne's lifetime. He may have written in it, you know, 20, 30 years later. So I think it's important to remember that actually this book was predominantly kept safe by the women of his family, perhaps almost even without too much of his knowledge after he'd written it and read it, perhaps after Anne's actual downfall. It was kept and passed mainly between this kind of circle of women who I believe certainly had a personal connection to Anne Boleyn through a woman named Elizabeth Hill, who was the daughter of Elizabeth Shirley, and so the niece of Sir John Gage and Philippa Gage. And she was actually married to the sergeant of the king's cellar, Richard Hill, at the court of Henry VIII while Anne was queen. And we have several records of them in contact with each other. And actually, as well, Elizabeth Hill was born and raised in Sundridge in Kent, which is literally only 7 miles away from Hever. And so it's possible to me that they actually were aware of each other. Anne and Elizabeth Hill were known to each other, or their families were at least known to each other, certainly before Anne came to court. And I think that's an interesting kind of aspect of who do you trust really at that time in Anne's life? Who does she pass this book to? And it seems to have been, yeah, very much kept within the secret covert circles of Kentish women mainly, but the women of Sir John Gage's family.
And it was certainly, as you say, that it was the political element that shocked me, because Gage is very much kind of marked as one of the strongly conservative traditionalists in the 1530s who was very sympathetic to Catherine of Aragon, Henry's first wife. So that, I mean, that is one of many gems that your work has uncovered. And what was it like? I mean, we've touched on this a little, realizing that there was such an untold story of that. I mean, it's just extraordinary, Kate. It really is.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it continues, to be honest, to unravel. I'm still working with these books at the moment, and I find out new things about them all the time. And it's just incredible to me that there's so much untapped story and potential in these books, and that nobody's really kind of dedicated scholarship to them before, which is why it's an honor for me to be able to do that. But it's incredible. I'm generally a sort of social historian, cultural historian, but for my thesis, I've obviously delved deep into book history and kind of material history. But what I love is recovering the human element behind the material object. And so for me, my research has very much been about recovering the human voices and stories that we can relate to today behind this book. And so yeah, that kind of story, that narrative is what really excites me. And I think there's so much there that kind of continues in Anne's afterlife with this book, but also throughout the rest of the book's 16th century life.
Well, Hever, just to take us to where it is, which is, of course, as we've mentioned, Hever Castle. And I think it's one of the most beautiful homes in the British Isles. And you share the post of assistant curator with Dr. Owen Emerson, who's also appeared on the show. What's it like to work at Hever? For so many people, it looks like a fairy tale castle and it has such a rich history. What is it like to work there?
Oh, it's honestly just the best thing ever. I actually started at Hever almost 10 years ago now. I first did work experience there as a 16-year-old. And I sort of never really left. I think after each summer after that, I came back to do kind of seasonal work in between school and university. And then, yeah, to come back this year in the capacity of assistant curator is an incredible kind of full circle moment for me personally, I think, as well. And yeah, I've got a very strong connection to Hever as a place, but also the people. I mean, you mentioned Dr. Anne Emerson, who has just been the most incredible mentor to me over the last year. He was the first person outside of my university that I showed my full thesis to. He has just been such an amazing friend and support this whole time, because it's quite a crazy world, this world of sort of popular history. And being very new to it this year was a lot to take in. So yeah, I've been incredibly grateful for people like him who have guided me through it. And yeah, the team at Hever is just really amazing. They're all wonderful people. So it's the place and the people combined that make it such a special location to work, I think. I mean, where better could you have an office than somewhere like Hever?
Nowhere, really.
Yeah, exactly.
It's extraordinary. Well, where can our listeners find you on social media?
Oh, so you can find me on Twitter, which is at Kate E. McCaffrey. I think I just hit 2,000 followers last night, which was very exciting. And I also have a website, which is kateemccaffrey.wordpress.com, where I'm trying to give updates on my research as I go and link to appearances and things I've done elsewhere. So this podcast will be on there.
Oh, good. Well, I mean, Kate, I Manners aside, I cannot thank you enough for this. I have found this completely fascinating. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
And with that, I would like to thank Kate particularly for providing such a fascinating season finale to season two of Single Malt History, and to my guests over the season, Doctors Lauren Mackay, Owen Emerson, Linda Porter, Elizabeth Norton and Robert Peel, Claire Ridgway, Gianna Rayburn, and of course, Kate McCaffrey. And lastly, to you two for your time and support in joining us as we went from 12th century England to 18th century Barbados and 1920s Northern Ireland. We've heard of how the Windsors rescued the Habsburgs, spying in the Tudor court, Marie Antoinette's execution, abolitionist bestsellers, and a love affair between two men that rocked the English monarchy. It's been wonderful, and I'm looking forward to returning for season 3. In the meantime, take care. Thank you.